We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
You are listening to KC Sports Network, the number one podcast network for today's Kansas City sports fans. With former players from your favorite teams, informed perspectives, and former insiders, this is the place for you. KC Sports Network is proudly presented by Emprise Bank, your partner in possible.
What is up, Chiefs Kingdom? Happy Thanksgiving, and welcome back to One-on-One, a KC Sports Network podcast. I am your co-host, Mike DeVito. Big Jeff, unfortunately, isn't here today, but as you can see, we have an incredibly special guest who really needs no introductions to Chiefs Kingdom, but I'm going to go ahead and do it anyway, and that is my brother, 17 years, T. Rich?
Yeah, I snuck in 17 somehow.
17 years, perennial All-Pro Bowler, perennial All-Pro. Jeez, T. Rich, you got all kinds of accolades, man. I could sit here for 20 minutes and talk about your resume. My brother, Tony Richardson. T. Rich, thank you so much for coming on the podcast, man. How you doing today, brother?
Doing well, and definitely thank you for having me, like, you know, to be able to talk to you and to speak to my brother, and obviously support your show is amazing. So happy Thanksgiving to you, your family, and everyone else listening to the show, and looking forward to having some fun tonight.
Yeah, man. Oh, I'm so grateful you're here. I was very lucky in my career not only to get to play football, but to get to play football with some legends. And you are one of them. You are one of those people that I get to tell my kids, hey, I got to take the field and suit up with T. Rich. So it's an honor to have you on, brother. I want to talk about first, what are you up to, man? Like, what are the things you're doing now? I mean, you obviously have an incredible resume. Like I said at the beginning, what is, like, where would we find T. Rich now? What are you up to? What are you doing?
Yeah, so currently I'm living here in New York still. Yeah, I work with NFL legends, and so right. Our point person in Kansas City would be Will Shields. Right. And I know he has, you know, kind of a bigger territory, but you know, now the teams, I kind of see it over a region, so pretty much the Northeast. So it's the AFC teams in Northeast as well as the NFC teams in Northeast. So it's actually, you know, it's really cool. So really, you know, with NFL legends, you know, we get a chance to, because the biggest thing, you know, I think you can attest to this as me as well, it's like the biggest thing you miss when you leave the game is your camaraderie. You miss that locker room feel. You miss being around the guys. And, you know, we see it sometimes, guys go out there in no man's land and just kind of disappear. So the one thing we want to do is, you know, first celebrate, you know, your career, meet you where you are. You know, some guys, you know, may have played 5 years and may have been out for a year or two, and they still are in that transition mode where they're trying to figure out what they're going to do. So one thing we want to do from the league standpoint is just more so support, you know, our guys, like I said, create that locker room feel and just let them know that, you know, if you play 1 year in this league, you play 2 years, you got a chance to do something that less than 1% of the entire world had a chance to do. And you know what? Let's celebrate that. And also, let's catapult that into your, whatever that next phase of life looks like. And, you know, one thing that we know is that the NFL shield carries a lot of weight. And and a lot of times, you know, you talk to guys, they're like, oh, man, dang. You know, all I did was play football. And I'm like, don't ever say that. Because all you do is play football. And the skills that we learn, as you know, those transfer over to everything else you're going to do the rest of your life, as far as, you know, being a leader in the locker room or being a leader in a company, submitment to authority, whether if it's, you know, being a great teammate, being someone to support. So all those kind of things, just, you know what, the uniform's going to be different. We're not going to put that helmet on for again, which I don't want to put it on. you know, our uniform's going to change. So now we might have to put on a collar shirt, nice pair of slacks, and then, you know, change our uniform, but it's still the same skill sets that we already know.
T. Rich, what you have done for our community and for the guys coming out, myself and so many others included, has been huge. A few episodes back, Jeff Allen and I, Jeff was on an Amazon Prime documentary that Thomas Jones did called Life yeah. After. He was, yep. And so Jeff was one of the weeks that they followed. And so we sort of talked about how difficult it is to get done with football and be doing one thing your entire life. And now all yep. of a sudden you're off that train and you got to sort of remake and put the pieces back together and figure out who you are now. And the NFL Legends community and T. Rich, what you do, I mean, you take that role to another level. I see your social media. Obviously, we've been fellowshipping and catching up, but I yeah. see everything that you do, and you have made an incredible difference for so many guys retiring out of the NFL. So I thank you for that, brother. The mantle you're taking up over there is huge, and the NFL Legends community. I mean, when I have anything going on, any sort of issue or things, you know, things coming up or whatever, I'm going right to you guys, yeah. and it always, yeah. you know, email right back, and things are taken care of. I mean, you guys just treat us like we're still players, and I think yeah. one of the most difficult things when you retire is you quickly realize, you know, it doesn't work like it used to, right? You can't just exactly. call somebody and get something done. You know, now you're part of the regular. You know, you're just sort of doing the real world thing now. You're yeah. you're off the NFL train, but you guys. You guys really help us in so many different ways. And so I'm grateful for that, T. Rich. I want to get into your career, man, because I know you spent 150 years in the NFL. You got so much experience. And I know a big chunk of that was in Kansas City. But yeah. before we get into Kansas City, talk to me about being an undrafted free agent, because you and I have that same story. But when yeah. you came in the league, I mean, when I thought it was tough when I came in the league, you came in the damn league. It was the Wild West, man. I mean, yeah. that was tough. So talk to me about sort of what your career was like, and yep. especially getting started. Like what did it – 1994, an undrafted free agent, yep. what was that like, brother?
Yeah, I think for me personally, it was – well, first and foremost, I go all the way back. You know, I'm not going to go back all the way down the train. But, you know, my dad was a military man. So, you know, he served our country for 32 years. You know, I was born in Germany. And so for me, one thing I definitely know, and some of the traits that my dad taught me, was hard work. And so, and it's, you know, you look at it, like you said, you experienced it, and like you're on the other end of that coin and you're an undrafted free agent, boy, that hill was like this. You know what I mean? And it's like, it's tough, you know, because, right. but you know the thing about it, I think the best thing that happened to me, obviously having that upbringing with my dad, but, right. you know, playing at Auburn University. So for me, you know, playing at a small town, well, I guess in high school, coming from a small town and having to go to like a big university like Auburn, and just understanding like, all 100 of the kids are literally all like five-star recruits, or you know, so it's like yeah. you're fighting every single day. And so it's just, you know, I didn't get drafted. I think I was so naive, and you know, looking back on it, that I didn't even know what I didn't know. And so right. when I got the opportunity to go to the Dallas Cowboys, we had just come off an undefeated season at Auburn, and the guys that really only got drafted that year because we were on probation was Wayne Gandy. He was a first-round tackle from the Rams. Right. James Bostic, and I think we had maybe a defensive end. That was our entire draft class. So when I had a chance to go to Dallas, and I don't know why, you know, I chose it. They had just come on back-to-back Super Bowls, and I'm looking around. I'm like Charles Haley from Leon Lett to Michael Irvin to Troy. And I'm like, you know, I'm around nothing but superstars. I'm like, why am I going to try to make that team? But, you know, it's just one of those things that, you know, I just hit the ground, you know, running. And like I said, just kept my blinders on. And really just didn't think about, okay, well, you know what? There's about eight running backs here, and I'm number eight on the depth chart. So I was just like, every single day, bro, I was just out there just like, you know what, doing the best that I could do, put my best foot forward, and just kind of let the chips fall as they may. And so I didn't make the team the first year, and I was on practice squad. And to me, I wouldn't want that any other way, because I think, you know, sometimes, I think for me, and I think my course, I think God had a plan and a purpose, and I'm not quite sure – had I been a first-round draft choice in Dallas, that I may have still had that hunger, or may have still had that fight that you have to have as an undrafted free agent. Because you know, like people are like, oh man, you work out even on your off days. I said, yeah, I like working on my off days, but that's the day they also bring in different people to work out.
I see you seeing what's going on. Yeah, that's right.
I'm over the squat, and I was like, okay, well, that's a He was like a receiver. One of that coaches out there, he looks like one of that. I'm not sure if he's a fullback. I'm like, right. He's like, man, make sure my locker's still here. Dude, I did that for my entire career. And guys used to be like, dude, you're so paranoid. And I'm like, I'm not paranoid. I'm just realistic. Because you gotta imagine, I mean, you know, it's like, this is a business. And every single day, the front office are charged with bringing, you know, the best players in and putting the roster together. Right. And so that ever there is what kind of kept me going and kept me moving. And, you know, I thank God that, you know, I went to the Dallas Cowboys. And then once I got to Kansas City, you know, having Marty Schottenheimer was literally like having my dad, you know, as a coach, because he was stern, he was tough, he was hard-nosed. But if he told you what he expected of you, and as long as you did that, then you were fine. And that's the thing I like. It's like, you know, sometimes you get, you know, around coaching staffs and they play games. And they're like telling you one thing, we're doing something else. Nah, there was no sugarcoating with Marty. Right, right. You know, he was going to let you know where you stood. And if you wasn't cutting the bill, then he was going to let you know. And if you didn't, you're going to be out of there. So I love that, because that way I knew, you know, as long as I kept putting positive things on the tape, because, you know, the eye in the sky don't lie. Then if I'm putting positive things on tape, then, you know, I had an opportunity to kind of stay around.
Oh, you know, T. Rich, I had very similar story. And I can say the same exact thing. Like, thank God. I had that sort of I went to the University of Maine, obviously a small school, had to earn that. And then getting to the NFL, coming in 2007, Eric Mangini's the head coach. Eric put a big and you know this, put a premium on just hard work. Like, if you showed up and you worked hard and you didn't complain, just put your head down, he was going to give you, you know, even if you didn't have the talent, maybe he was going to make sure that you were part of that organization, because that's really the sort of philosophy. And you remember, I mean, you remember Eric, because you were there in 2008 with Eric.
I saw Coach Mangini on TV today. I was laying on the couch and I heard him. I was like, that noise, that echo, and I kind of felt like I was in a bad dream. And I was like, that's Mangini. I looked up, I was like, I was up in there with Mangini.
Man, it was tough. It was tough, right? I mean, those first 2 years, 2007, 2008 with Eric, But Mangini, that was hard. But man, that built the foundation for the rest of my career. I was the same way as you. I was afraid every year about, I got to make this team, regardless if I signed a contract or whatever it was. So, I'm sorry. Go ahead. Did I cut you
off? No, I was going to say, and that's the thing. Like, in my year, when I came to the Jets in 2008, that was the hardest year of football I've ever had in my entire career.
Okay. That was it.
I'm not even going to joke, bro. I was like, dude, I used to drive home sometimes like, man, I don't know if I could do this. Because I lived in, you know, I still live in Long Island City. So everyone was always, you know, give me a hard time because I had, you know, so far to drive to have to go through Manhattan and get over here. But there was times I was questioning, like, man, I don't know if this is for me. Because it was, but you know what? Like you said, it built that foundation. And it was like, it was the dog days, like every single day where you would just walk around like, dude, I used to go in meetings, I would have like anxiety attacks. You know what I mean? Like, and I knew my stuff, but I'm like, I would question myself, like, you know, oh, what's the three technique you got to do on defense? Like, I'm like, why do I need to know that? But you know, I learned more ball. I'm going to tell you, I learned more ball that year than I learned in my entire career on any level. But that atmosphere was just so like, I mean, it was hard. It was tough, bro. It was, you know, it was extremely hard. It was like, man, I was like, dude, I don't know. I was like, Dad, I don't think I could do this. It was hard, bro. It was tough.
And think about that. That was what, year 15, 16 for you? I mean, that was like, I remember T-Rich, I had a book like this.
Oh, no.
That was just like stuff that was written on the walls around the facility or the names of the people in the media department. Because Eric Mangini we would have a team meeting. And he would say, DeVito, stand up. Especially if you were a rookie, DeVito, stand up. Tell me, when you pull in, what's on the front gate of the facility? Like, damn, I don't know what's on the damn front.
I'm just trying to make it here on time, man. I'm not what's on the wall. But when he got, I don't know if you remember, when he got Eric Ainge, and this is what I knew. I was like, this is real. He said, Eric Ainge, stand up. He said, name everyone in the room. And I'm like, dude, this dude, and you know, Angie was pretty smart. Dude, he named every last single person, defensive back coach, front office person. And I'm like, good night. I'm like, dude, I'm like, if I ever do this, you're gonna get me up out of here. Cause I feel like I know all the running backs, I might know all the receivers, I might know the defense line, but I can't name everyone in this room.
Right.
That was hard, bro. It was tough.
Yeah. Well, and then he'd bring like the media department or like somebody from the third floor, like the business people, finance people. Like who would have named the finance people? Like, what?
Yep.
But that built that foundation and man. I learned football. Like, yeah. I understood the game. When I look at these young kids now, T-Rich, they come in, they got 5 minutes. They got like seven. They have like seven padded practices in training camp before things get real. I don't know how the heck they. I don't know how the heck they do that. What do you? Before we get on to Kansas City, I do want to talk. I mean, what do you think about that? Because I feel like when I look at the league, you see these rules were put in place to prevent injury, but at the same, but it seems like it hasn't prevented injury. Yeah. And I do sometimes wonder if the level of play has fallen off of it, just especially when I look at the big guy, and you were one of us, right? The big guys, because you can't practice coming downhill on an ISO block in spiders. You just can't do it. But when you're going to do it a few times in training camp, and then for the first couple of weeks, and then you're not going to have pads on for the rest of the season. I mean, what do you think, T. Rich? Like, is this just old man just being all, you know, curmudgeon
or
whatever?
Not at all. Like, I go out to watch the Jets at training camp, and it's like literally like they're just running around, and like I'm like, okay, and they were like, oh, this is a padded day. I'm like, padded day? Where's the pads? It's like no contact, nothing. But that's the thing. Coach Mill would always say, you can't get better at football. Only way you can get better at football is playing football. And right. So you got to – and you understand how it feels like for me as a fullback. Like, I needed to see what the guard-center combo was like. Right. And to see how tight I needed to come across to get up to the Mike linebacker, whatever. And you can't simulate that in a walkthrough. I mean, I think a classic example, and obviously it's extremely difficult to practice these kind of plays, but when Buffalo when they fumbled a snap against the Vikes.
Yeah.
And one, that's going to be extremely hard to rep that play because obviously, you know, the center's about to get blown up.
Right.
But
you know,
kind of one of those things, it's like you can't physically, you know, if you're not going 9-on-7, when the Jets, so you remember 9-on-7 was harder than anything that we were ever going to do in the game. I don't care. Boy, if we had a 60-play running drive, there was nothing that was going to be harder. It was our 9-on-7, it was 12-play. Because we used to get after it. That was a full-speed collision every single day, sometimes twice a week. It was insane. But
and that was going to week 16. That didn't stop. Yeah.
No. It was, and even training camp. Like training camp was brutal. But yeah, so I think I definitely believe that you know, a lot of these soft tissue injuries, different things like that, because you can't get better at playing football if you're not playing. And it's like, and sometimes, and you know how Mangini was. It was like, dude, we didn't have a good week, and we're like, okay, easing into it. Dude, he ramp it up harder the next week. I'm like, dude, my shoulder feels like it's about to fall off.
I remember.
He's like, you got to set your pads. And, dude, we went into a game. That's one thing. I was not going to get caught off guard by contact because we did it in practice. And I'm like, oh, man, this is all – because you feel it in practice. And then in the game, all of a sudden, the linebacker comes downhill. And I'm like, dude, this is easy. You know what I mean?
Yeah, we've been doing this
during the week. Yeah, yeah.
T-Rich, I remember Eric Mangini, there was snow on the ground, so it had to be December in Hofstra. We started practice with one-on-one tackle drills.
Yeah.
Remember we used to go 15 yards apart? And then, like, that's how we started practice. Man, totally.
You already know if it starts like that, you know, it ain't getting no better.
No. We were laughing the other week. I was telling Jeff, because the Chiefs had the bye week, I was like, man, those first few years without
the bye week was the worst. I hated bye week.
Oh, hated bye.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Bye week was crucial.
Keep it. Keep bye week.
Exactly.
Let's just go. Let's roll.
Let's keep going. Yeah, exactly.
Man.
Hey, folks. Hate to interrupt, but I got to tell you about our friends at DraftKings. And NFL Sundays are only getting better. And so are the incredible offers at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. Right now, new customers can bet just $5 on any NFL team to win and get $200 in free bets if they do. Check this out. Right now, everyone can earn up to a 100% boost with DraftKings stepped up same game parlays. Go to the DraftKings Sportsbook app, place a same game parlay, and combine multiple bets like which team will win, player props, and point totals. I really love doing these same game parlays. The DraftKings app is the best app out there. You can't get a better experience just user-wise, the deals, everything, it's perfect. And with payouts bigger than ever, DraftKings Sportsbook is my go-to when betting on the NFL. Here's what you got to do. Got to download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use promo code KCSN and place a $5 pregame moneyline bet to get $200 in free bets if your team wins. Only at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL with code KCSN. Minimum age and eligibility restrictions apply. See the show notes for details.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Now let's get back to the show.
T. Rich, all right, so when I look, man, you played with some, I mean, not only are you one of the greatest players to ever do it, but you played with some of the greatest players and greatest coaches to ever do it. You brought up Shoddy, you brought up Vermeil. Talk to me about those two guys. Like, what were their coaching styles like? What was the atmosphere like? Like, I always like to think back and compare sort of what it was like under Eric Mangini compared to Rex Ryan, compared to Andy Reid. You got two Hall of Famers there. What were those two guys like?
Yeah, it was pretty great. I mean, the good thing is that, you know, for me, I think the things that really helped me, I think you can attest to the same thing, is just like, you know, having leadership. So obviously when I looked at Dallas Cowboys, we had great leaders. When I got to Kansas City, you know, I mean, there was leaders across the board. I mean, I'm in the locker room with, you know, Marcus Allen, you know, Kimbo Anders, and then look on defense. I'm like, I had to go against Derek Thomas every day in one-on-ones. Like, I'm gonna tell you, I could never block him. But you know, the thing about it was like, if I gotta, you know, try to deal with DT from a linebacker standpoint, there's not a linebacker other than, God rest his soul, Junior Seau, that I had to deal with that was, you know, just like that. But it was like, you were prepped, you were ready. And that's the biggest thing. It's like, you know, Neil Smith, Dan Salamua, Tracy Simeon, you know, Dale Carter, James Hasty. Like, we had, like, you know, we had good leadership guys. And it's interesting because I did Rich Cimini's podcast, I think it was yesterday morning.
Yeah.
And he was asking me, because, you know, the whole situation with the quarterback came up. And so he was asking me, like, you know, what's some of the things that I see different from the locker rooms I've been in? I said, the thing that we don't have anymore, and I said, I know that the game's gotten younger and, you know, the money obviously is getting greater, but you don't have that grizzled vet that was like in year 10 who was a, you know, backup linebacker, but a special teams guy. Like, those were the guys that kept your locker room together. That was the glue. And you don't have those guys no more. And so that's the biggest thing. It's like, you know, Marty was such a great leader, but he also empowered people around to step up and lead. And that's the same thing with Vermeil and all those kind of things. It's like, you know what? The coaches can coach the X's and the O's, but your locker room has to take care of the locker room.
Right.
And things, you know, and there's, you know, how in the course of a season, things always come up, things happen and whatever. But we took care of that in-house. You know what I mean? It was like, you know, our coaches allowed the veterans leaders to lead. And so I think that was the biggest thing. It's just like, I love having that leadership style where, you know, Coach Vermeil would say to me all the time, he's like, T, whatever you do, don't ever be the smartest person in the room. He said, and don't be intimidated by people who are smarter than you, because that's the only way you're going to get better.
Right.
He said, all my coaching staffs, I wanted my offensive coordinator to one day go on to be a head coach.
Right.
I want my defensive coordinator to go on, because if I can empower my guys to lead and do what their skill set is, that's only going to make us better. But you got some coaches like, I got to be the smartest guy. I got to have my hand in this. I got to do this. And it's like, you know, so those are the things I really love from those leadership styles of really just like empowering the players to lead. And I think that's why, you know, like with Jeff Saturday, everyone's giving him a hard time. But I'm like, look, Jeff's smart enough and he's wise enough to realize, like, I just need to be a leader. I don't need to know what, you know, I don't have to know all this stuff. I need to, you know, learn it. But at the end of the day, my defensive line coach is going to work with the defensive line, my defensive back coach, and I don't need to have my hand and all that. But you know what? Jeff was a leader in that locker room, and he's still going to be a leader on that football team, and I think that's why he's going to be successful.
I'm totally with you with Jeff said. I couldn't believe the pushback. I was like, I would friggin' love for a guy like that. I mean, he just comes in there with instant clout. Like you know what this guy, you know what he did. I mean, this is I don't know, Jeff's a Hall of Famer, if not something. He's a really good player.
Oh, for sure.
So yeah, I'm with you. I didn't understand the pushback there. I think he's a fantastic choice. Talk to me. So I want to go back to about one point that you made about how we don't have that sort of grizzly vet in the locker room anymore.
Yeah.
When Rex first got to, so, you know, Eric Mangini brings you in, he brings Alan Faneca in, he brings, you know, all these guys that, you know, it was like, it, man, talk about leadership. I was really lucky in my career to have guys like you to look up to. But then when Rex comes, I remember on defense at each level, he brings in Jimmy Leonard for the secondary, Bart Scott at linebacker, and Marquise Douglas at defensive line. And these are your grizzly older guys. They're going to set the standard. They're going to teach you the defense. They're going to lead by example. And it was like they're going to tell you, they're going to show you what's up, what it means to be a Jet. Exactly. Why don't we have that anymore? Is it just the sort of the pace, the contract structure with the guaranteed money? You know, the older you get, the more you're guaranteed. I mean, talk to me, brother. Is there a reason we don't have it? Because we don't. We really don't. Yeah.
I think you hit the nail right on the head. I think a lot of it is just the way that the contracts are structured. And you think about, like, you know, it's interesting that the leaders on the team now become the players who are paid the most. And sometimes, it, you know, a guy could be both, but it doesn't necessarily have to be that way, because you think, like, I look back on some of the teams that the Jets have had, you know, since I've retired, and you have a guy like, you know, Jamal Adams, and nothing against Jamal Adams, but when he has to be the voice of the team in year three, you're like, what the heck? You know what I mean? Like, in year three, dude, I didn't open my mouth. You know what I mean?
Right.
Because there were so many guys in there. So I really believe, like you said, I think the way that the contracts are structured and the way the salary cap is built, you don't have those guys. I mean, your quarterback's generally going to be your highest paid guy. And if he happens to be, like a Tom Brady, great. And he's been around for, 18 years? That's a different story, but you just don't have those guys. All of a sudden, now your leader, your team is your third year, fourth year guy, just because now he's the highest paid guy, and everyone's looking up to him. And it's like, you know, that's the part I think that really has changed the game, and it affects the locker room, because, you know, how can you lead? How can you be a leader if you've never taught? If you've never been taught to be a leader, or you haven't had guys that can pass the torch? And that's the thing. I think every locker room I've been in, there's always been 2 to 3 veterans that you just looked at. Like when I was with the Jets, you know, when I was with the Chiefs, we had Dave Zott, and Dave was a strong Christian man. You know, he was the same guy every day, sitting in his locker. You know, guys are doing this, got Dave sitting there, he's reading his Bible. I'd go to his house, you know, he didn't even have a TV in the house, and he started teaching me about, like, you know, the importance of family and quiet time and things of that nature. But guess what? He's a former Penn State wrestler. Guess what? When you line up, Zop was going to give it to you. You know what I mean? So you looked at that. You looked at guys like that, because those were the guys that you like, you know, quiet demeanor, but also was a dog on the field. And that's Dave didn't ever have to get up and yell and scream. But if Dave says something, like, okay, like, whoa, you know what I mean? And those are the guys, that's how you build your locker room. So, yeah, I think that's really, I mean, dude, I'm like that. You look at, I mean, even like the current Chiefs teams right now, and, you know, obviously they have good leadership because your quarterback is, you know, and you got Travis Kelce, you got those guys. But you look around, oldest guy might be in his 8th year. I don't even know. Right. Like, you look at the rosters, you don't even have that 10-year guy anymore.
Yeah. Right. No. I mean, I remember my last year going into year 10, and my minimum contract was $1 million. And I'm like, I wouldn't pay me $1 million.
I know, right?
I'm a first, second down run guy. You know, I'm like, you know, I'm in for 20% of the play. So, I get that. But it's just, I mean, you bring up a good point. Like, when I look at Casey's roster, even though they do have fantastic leadership.
Exactly,
you don't have that grizzly vet. You look at Pat Mahomes, he's incredible. And I hear him talk, and he is a leader. But at the same time, it's not the Eric Berry's or the LaDainian Tomlinson's or the Tony Richardson's or the Sean Ellis, just something, the Derek Johnson's, right? I mean, there's just something about that. That is certainly that is certainly something that you would hope would get fixed, because those are the, and I feel like guys come in and there isn't a sort of, there isn't a standard anymore. Like when I walked into the Jets locker room or the Chiefs locker room, like the standard was set. And if you were a young guy, you had to live up to that. And now it's like, like you said, the young guys are coming in and they're expected to be the guy.
Yeah.
Right. Yep. I mean, and it's like, man, you, and again, going back to my other point, I mean, with seven practices and a couple OTAs and they're expected to be the guy now.
Yeah, exactly.
Just,
well, it also, it's also one of those things that I know it started to kind of fizzle out when I was kind of in the tail end of my career. And I was never like a big proponent in like hazing, but then it got to a point where they cut all that out. Like literally, like, you know, when I was leaving Minnesota and I was, you know, I think I was year 15 and you come into the tape line. I'm like, oh, yeah, Rook, I'm next. No, you're not. And I'm like, oh, no, I'm next. He was like, no, you're not. And they'd be ready to fight. And I'm like, dude, I ain't got time to be here trying to fight with no rookie. But the fact that you can't even establish that, like, the seniority. Like, you know what? If you get to year 15, guess what? You'll always be the first in the tape line. Awesome. But those kind of little things, like you said, the standard is set. It's like, dude, I knew, like, if I came in and didn't get in early and Michael Irvin was about to get taped, and I tried to jump on that table. No, that was not going to happen. You know what I mean? Charles Haley, man. Like, I'm going to tell Charles Haley, like, no, hey, look here, dude, I'm next. I'm going to tell him. But you know, it's one of those things, and like you said, and that kind of builds your not saying it's necessary, but it's the same thing in the military. It's the same thing in certain places. It's just like, it's a standard of respect. And now I think a lot of the young guys, I mean, you probably can't even, you know, I talk to some of these young guys, dude, they don't even know that. Like, I'm like, who do you think the greatest running back is? And I'm like, I'll say it. It's like, Jim Brown. Like, who's that? I'm like, dude, if you don't know, if you're a running back and you don't know who Jim Brown is, you need to take your pass right now.
Yeah, that's it.
But they don't even, they have no respect for, it's the now, it's the here to now. And they're like, oh, the greatest running back right now is Nick Chubb. I said, oh, yeah, in the whole league? Yeah, in the whole league. In the history of the league. I'm like, man, you didn't say that. In the history of the league, Nick Chubb is the greatest running back ever. And I'm saying, like, but that's the thing. It's like, it's, you know, it's our young generation. It's a gratification. These kids, I talked to a lot of my buddies who are coaching, dude, they have to have cell phone breaks. I'm like, what is that? They're like, their attention span is so small that they give them breaks. They can't bring their phones in the meeting rooms, but they give them like breaks every like 15 or 20 minutes so they can just get up, stand up and go check their phone. Cause if not, they can't exist. And I'm sitting here like, I'm like, what? And I'm like, yeah, it's like, yeah, we had, I'm like, dude, remember how long we used to sit in meetings? Forever. I'm talking about like we couldn't even get up to get water. Like we couldn't even. I'm like, what do you? He was like, yeah, every 15 to 20 minutes, we have to get a kid's breaks because their attention span, they can't concentrate and they're automatically thinking about their social media, they're thinking about their TikTok. And I'm just like, that's where we're at right now. We have to, every 15 minutes, these kids got to get up just because they're, yeah, that's crazy. When I heard that, I was like, wow.
That's insane. I didn't know that, man. T Rich, I remember my rookie year. If I left a meeting, I was worried about getting cut. So like I would never leave. And man, Jeannie, those meetings would go forever. And I remember one time I had to go to the bathroom so bad. And I'm thinking this meeting's gotta be over soon.
Yeah.
And it was like another hour. I thought I was gonna die. But I was like, I can't. No. I would rather die. Like, I'm gonna piss my pants. But I'd rather do that than leave because he will cut me if I leave the meeting. You know,
and think about how hard that was. It was like, because that was the thing. Like, it's, I used to look forward to going out to practice just because I had to sit in those meetings. Those meetings were brutal. And I'm just like, dude. And I was like, dude, football can't be this. It can't be this hard. It can't be this miserable. But then you go out there and we're like, remember those warm-up drills? Dude, I'd be gassed. By the time we finished individual, I was done. And I'm just like, dude, I don't know how I'm going to get through the rest of this practice, but – I used to tell TJ, I'm like, hey, TJ, man, pray for me. He's like, what's going on? I said, dude, I'm about to die. And I felt like I prided myself in always being in shape. And I'm like, dude, this individual drill is brutal. I'm like, they wanted no gas in the tank at all going into practice. And I was like, dude, I ain't going to be able to make it today. We only have one or two fullbacks. And I'm like, dude.
Oh, man, you were in a tough position.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
You were in a tough position.
He brought me here, and man, Jeannie told me, he said, T, you know, he said, no, you never called me T like you knew me. He told me, like, hey, Tony. He's like, yeah. He's like, you know, I don't like fullbacks. I'm looking at him. I thought he was joking. I said, well, I want to say, well, why'd you bring me here? He said, yeah, you know, when you have a fullback, and he literally would say this, like, right in the middle of practice, I'm over here like, oh, yeah, I'm going to be out of here tomorrow. And he was like, yeah. He was like, if you have a fullback, it just creates an automatic tail. because he said, if you're in a strong formation, we already know deep. I'm like, all right. So if you know this, then why am I here? You know what I mean? Like, if you don't like fullbacks. Right. So his biggest thing was like, he's like, yeah, that's why I like, you know, a wing back or a tight end, because guess what? He could be in the backfield. He can motion out and run a nine route. I'm like, well, dude, if you want me to run a nine route, I ain't going to be able to do that. You know what I mean? He's telling me like, and he's also telling me like, and I don't even know. I think a lot of people didn't even notice, you know, Westhoff would be like, hey, man, it might be hard for you to beat up this week. I'm like, what are you talking about? He's like, yeah, if you're not, you know, a four-time, all four-phase special teams guy, you know, I'm like, why in the world would you Brad bring me here? I've been a starter my entire career. Now, at the end of my career, you're over here telling me I might be inactive. I've never been inactive other than, like, maybe once or twice my rookie year or early on. And, and he's over talking about, yeah, you know, Mangini just really don't like fullbacks. He said, I'm fighting for you every week. And I'm like, now I got to deal with this. Dude, he's like fighting for him. I'm like, dang. I'm like, dude, I don't know. Dude, that 1 year with the Jets was probably the most miserable year of my entire career. Oh, but it taught me resilience. Until Rex got here, dude, it's like all of a sudden the plants started blooming.
The clouds, the dark clouds spread. Yeah. And rainbow came over.
Dude, remember, and it's crazy that to even rehash this stuff, like as soon as practice started, it was like the blinds. And the whole facility just go down. Dude, the staff couldn't even watch us practice. They couldn't even speak to us. We came in the facility. They saw us. They had to turn around and go back upstairs. Like everything. I'm like, this is brutal.
Hey, sorry to interrupt, but I've got to tell you about our friends at Liquid Death. And by now, you know that those strange tall boys in the bottled water section, there's not actually beer. It's a mountain spring water from the Alps, and it's called Liquid Death. It's a crazy new water brand. Cans look wild. I've got one right here. You know I've already got the severed lime with me. One of my favorite flavors, my favorite flavor, actually, of the Liquid Death. It comes in several different flavors if you want the sparkling water, the still water. It's all great. But why is it called Liquid Death? Well, it'll brutally murder your thirst. That's why. And their infinitely recyclable Tallboy cans are here to bring death to plastic pollution. I'd love to see that. They also donate 10% of the profits from every can sold to kill plastic pollution as well. Here's what you got to do. You got to go to liquiddeath.com/KCSN to use their store locator tool, or you can go find Liquid Death at your Target, Walmart, 7-Eleven, or again, go to liquiddeath.com/KCSN, find a store locator tool, use that, and that's liquiddeath.com/KCSN. Let's get back to the show.
Man, T. Rich, that is so funny, man. I forgot all about that.
Yeah.
But I do remember, man, when Rex got there, it was like difference. That was unbelievable. Brother, I want to get into a situation that happened with the Jets. So I remember talking a lot about New York. But to get there, I want to talk about some of the leaders that you were around in KC. So you named a bunch of them. So talk to me about maybe give me your top leader, like just like paradigm, this is what leadership looks like. Who are those guys, and what did that look like to you? What did you see from those guys?
You know, I had a lot. You know, that's a beautiful thing when you have to kind of like jog your memory because you had so many. But you know, I remember early in my career, you know, having James Hasty, and James was no nonsense. Like, dude, that dude, and that's when back in the day, when you bump a run, you could pretty much danger assault someone at the line of scrimmage. So, but Hasty was that guy. He was that guy, like, you know. If Hasty says something, like literally, you know, that's in the days where, you know, guys would get into it with coaches and like tell them I'm not doing this and whatever. It was like those kind of days. Right. But Hasty was one of those guys. He literally was the reason why I became a player rep. And he didn't even ask me. He said, hey. And I was like, yeah. He said, hey, come in here. I was like, what's going on? He's like, hey, this is a union meeting. I'm like, okay. He's like, I want you to do. He's like, everything that everyone talks about, you need to write down. I'm like, dang, I'm saying we just left practice. They got to do this. But he was like, everything that's going to affect you during your career, after your career, is in the CBA. He said, I'm going to need you to memorize the CBA, and I'm going to need you to write down everything. And so then, like, the following year, he was like, okay, you're going to be the union rep. And I'm sitting here like, dang. But you know what? He empowered me. And so I was literally the guy that would walk around to guys, and I'm like, hey, man, you know, make sure you sign for your 401k. And it was like, ah, T-Rich, you're just trying to take my money. I'm like, no, bro, I'm not trying to take your money. And I'm like, where's the 401k? I need some wheels. I need some rims. I was like, listen. I tell him, I said, a 401k is going to be a vehicle that's gonna carry you for the rest of your life,
right?
And it ain't no shiny rims, it ain't no gold chain, it ain't any of that stuff. And I used to talk to guys like that. So, you know, for me, that kind of, you know, that was a leader that really, you know, really, really stuck out to me. And then, you know, I had, like I said, Dave Zott. I mean, literally, Dave's the one that literally was the first one that invited me to his church. It was a revival. And that particular night, we had Bishop T.D. Jakes, Bishop Eddie Long, and and wow. Pastor Steve Brown. Yeah, and it was at David's church. And so he invited me, like we're sitting on the second row, and he just, and the pastor said, is there anyone here that just kind of, not kind of, but feels like, you know, what my message said today, has you feeling a certain way, and would you like to give your life to Christ? And so I had already committed my life to Christ when I was in college and, you know, FCA and, yeah. you know, all that. But then this was the first time, like, literally, I'm like, it just really just hit me. It was like, dude, it looked like I floated from my seat. And next thing I know, I'm in the front. And it was like, and then Dave just took me under his wing. So you're talking about, that's the leadership for life. You know what I mean? That's the leadership that you can't, it has nothing to do with X's and O's. And that's the thing, like, so Hasty prepared me from the standpoint of knowing that CBA and then also realizing, like, I'm going to empower you so that you can be the guy. Because he was, you know, Hasty said, like, man, I'm getting toward the tail end of my career. And this is when the league and the PA was, it was consensus. It was like, dude, there used to be fights in our union meetings. Like,
right.
Gene Upshaw and Marcus Allen swinging at each other. I'm like, I need to know what's going on in here. And I started to understand that I was a union rep and then I was on the executive committee. And that was preparing me for life after football. But then with Dave, he was preparing me for life after everything. You know what I mean? And so
that's right.
And I look at two guys like that and it's like, and both like, you know, Zot. I mean, Zot was a quiet, subservient leader. And just like he led by example in every area of his life. Because for me, everything has to match up or has to line up. Like I can't follow someone if it's like, okay, this is great here, but then
yeah.
I have to feel, you know what right. I mean? It's a whole right. different right. person.
Right.
And then, you know, and then Hasty's the same way. Like, you know, family man, meanness, dude, is mean as a rattlesnake. You know what I mean? Right. He also would literally like, you know, get in your face and he'd also get in someone's face on defense. But also everything that there was no gap. Like it was, I saw how he was as a dad. I saw how he was as a husband and right. I saw how he was in the football field. And it was never like, okay, look at Hasty now. Like, no, it was, right. those are the guys. And so, you know, having two guys like that, you know, in my life, you know, and I've had, you know, I mean, there was just so many guys and guys led in different ways, but those two guys are two that really stick out to me the most.
Zotter, I love, so, you know, and you know this, when we were in New York, Dave, finished. So Dave followed your career, started in yeah. Kansas City, finished in New York. Yeah. I went the opposite. But Dave was and still is the director of player development
yeah,
in definitely. New York. And he just, you're right. I mean, just an incredible man to look up to, right? I mean, yep. and you talk about, like, if you're going to be a leader, it's that old adage, like, are you doing the same things when nobody's looking, right? It's easy yeah, to go up and rah-rah and say these things.
Yep.
But, like, Zot's the kind of man that I know, whatever he's preaching, he's doing that when nobody's watching. Yep. But I think about him as a player. So in 2009, I don't know if you remember this, Rex had the Mark Sanchez camp. So Sanchez had just gotten drafted.
Yeah.
It was at the end of the OTAs, and we did like an extra 3 or 4 days. Mm-hmm. And I stayed to get some extra work in. And it was for Mark to get used to the offense and stuff like that. So it was all the rookies. And they didn't have enough offensive linemen. So they told Zotter, they said, Zotter, oh, you suit up. Now, I was just there going through individual drills, right? But when Zotter suits up and goes in on 11 on 11, they say, hey, DeVito, you go in and go bull rush him. Go run him over, right? So go – and I'm like, oh, man. Like, all right, screw it. I'm going to go run Zotter over. T-Rich, when I tell you they snapped the ball, man, Zotter got out of his stance, and I went to bull him. And he just freaking locked yep. in and sat me down. Now, this is what? How many years had he been out? I mean, this was 2000.
He's been out for a while, yeah.
Yeah, like 7, 8 years. He sat me right down, that. Man. I yeah. couldn't move. No, I'm like,
that'll never happen. Could you imagine if you got someone that, I mean, literally, it's like, that's what you say, coming off the street and just went in there and live drill and just got after it.
320, yeah. I'm a 320-pound, like, just ready to rock defensive tackle. I'm yeah, coming yeah. off 100 miles an hour and trying to make an example. Boy, he shut me right down, too. I'm like, oh, man.
That's crazy.
Oh, Zotter is something else, man. But I wanted to get into that because I had the, again, like I said, I had the blessing to look up to you and guys like you. And we saw what recently happened with Zach Wilson in New York. Yep. And I just thought about that when we were there. That never, you never, even, you know, when Mark was the quarterback, Pennington, Favre, whoever it was, you never would have gotten a response like that where, you know, the defense holds the opposing offense to 3 points.
Yep.
You know, Zach and the Jets offense only put 3 points on the board. And they ask him, you know, do you feel sort of, you know, are you, you feel like you let the defense down?
Yeah.
And he just said, no, not at all. I was like, just blown away because, man, it just seemed like the opposite of good leadership. And one of the things with Zach Wilson coming out was, you know, he has the talent, but does he have the sort of intangible things that it takes to be not only a quarterback in the NFL, but a quarterback for the New York Jets?
Yep.
So, and it just seems like that was one of the question marks. Like, you know, he might not have that kind of attitude, that kind of whatever it takes to be, you know, to be in that incredibly difficult position. Yeah. And with that answer, it just highlighted, like, yeah, no, he doesn't. Yeah. He doesn't. Yeah. I mean, did you feel the same way with that? Because, you know, we both know there are going to be days where the offense does better than the defense. The defense does better than the offense. We see it with Kansas City all the time. When you heard that, were you just kind of like, man, damn, that's not the right answer?
Yeah, that hit me. That struck me in such a wrong way because, like you said, you know, your quarterback is the CEO of the team. And so, and the best thing I heard yesterday was from Rex, because obviously, you know, living in New York is the hottest topic out right now.
Yeah.
But Rex said this, and it was interesting because I remember Rex used to have us, when we did medium, Rex would say, you know what, I think we had two teammates and someone else we mentioned. So in everything, we'd be like, oh, T-Rich, how was your performance today? Hey, man, listen, you know what, I was watching DeVito play today, and I saw Bart Scott do this, and then, you know, whatever. And so Rex mentioned this, and he said, you know what, when you win, it should always be we and us. And then he said, but when you lose, you say I. And what, and all he literally had to do was, and you know, and I with them benching him today, I don't see how they ever can put him back in, because it's because you know, if they parade him back out there, which they won the Sundays, I think he's inactive. I mean, this fan base, I live right across the street here in Queens. I live right across the fire department. These dudes right now, if you cut them open, green's coming out of the door.
That's right.
They're hard nosed. Jet fans are your firefighters, your police officers, your electronics. These are hard nosed, you know, fan base, and they know what BS is, and that's BS, because all he would have had to say is like, you know what, I need to do better. I need to put us in more manageable downs, all those kind of things, versus like, no. I'm like, dude, first of all, he hasn't been around long enough to know how hard it is to play in New England, number one. But number two, to hold him to 0 points, no points, other than the field goal. And for him to get up there and say, no, we didn't let the defense down. I'm like, dude, because then even if that wasn't the case, and he said, you know what, I let the team down today, I didn't do this. Then that's when the veterans, leaders on defense say, hey, look here, it's like, man, we really appreciate that. Listen, man, it's not all on you. We need to do better. We all need to do better. We got your back. Shoot, you say no, dude, that locker room, that's like, if we could have hold on the screen right now, it's cut in half, and it's not repairable. Not this year with him. It's going to be very, very difficult.
Oh, T-Rich. And it's so sad because they were doing so well. And I know you like me, we care a lot about that organization. So, that was really sad. All right, brother, you've been on for 42 minutes, man. I'm incredibly grateful. Before I let you go, though, and I'm going to spring this on you, so forgive me. Your favorite Chiefs memory, man. Tell me, favorite memory, would be Arrowhead. I always hate that, and I was going to text you beforehand and tell you, and I just remembered. I'm sorry. So we can cut it. But favorite memory in KC.
You know, I there's so many, because I was just talking with Dante Hall yesterday.
Yeah.
Dude, we had so many great memories, but I'm gonna tell you one that really stuck out was it's training camp, and I want to say Herm was still with the we were getting ready to play the Falcons, and they were talking like mad jump, like mad stuff. And so Vermeer was like, you know what, we're gonna run the ball every single down. Like literally the first drive, we didn't complete one pass. We ran it every last single down. And dude, we went out and rushed for 8 rushing touchdowns. 8. Priest had 4. Derek Blaylock had 4. They were talking like mad junk. I guess, you know, Romero had got a hold of like some kind of stuff. They were talking noise in like training camp. And we said, we're going to run the ball. I'm talking about they could be 39. We were running it. Getting it. Woo! 32. Getting it. 4th and 1. Getting it. It's like, you know, if you're on the other side of that coin, dude, you get ran through like that. Dude, 8 rushing touchdowns. It's like, that was probably the most. I mean, you're talking about, you know, Willie Rowe, Will Shields. Jason Dunn, who was literally like a tackle. You know, Casey Wigman. Brian Waters. Dude, I'm talking about, you're talking about four different people off the, dude, we were taking defense linemen. They were just taking them back 10 yards and just sitting them down. It was like, and running backs, just, can you imagine giving up 8 rushing touchdowns? It was, that was pretty special. That's probably, you know, for me, because a lot of guys are always like, man, what are some of your favorite memories? Like, you know, was when you're running against the Broncos, you're carrying the ball. I'm like, no, mine is blocking, like, just owning people. It's like right in the mouth. You know, sir, you're going to get it. And my tailbacks were able to get 8 rushing touchdowns. That means the offensive line and fullback did their job. So,
man. I look forward to. Man, and T-Rich, you did such a great job at it, man. One of the best to ever do it. Brother, thank you for your time today. I know if I'm grateful. Chiefs Kingdom, incredibly grateful. Thank you for coming on, brother. We love you. Chiefs Kingdom, we will see you next week, hopefully with another W. Come back, check us out here on 1-on-1.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.